there's a lot of offerings of Christmas music out there. I've always been drawn to the recordings, you know, that I felt were really pure, like the old Philadelphia Brass recordings. You know, when something is done really straight from the heart, some of the Sinatra, Nelson Riddle arrangements, things like that. I just wanted to make one that was mine.
And that's one reason that Callie Banham, who is the solo English horn player with the St. Louis Symphony, invited her colleagues in the trombone section to join her on her brand new holiday recording. It's called Core Christmas. There's all kinds of fun surprises in these arrangements. It's called Core Christmas, and it's featured this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. So, Callie Banham, you have been with the St. Louis Symphony since 2006 when you were appointed to the solo English horn position by music director David Robertson. What have you enjoyed the most serving in this position so far?
I am thrilled to have the arena that I always dreamed about to be expressive. I wanted to be in a great American orchestra, and I felt like when I finally got this job, I had a lot of wonderful experiences in other smaller orchestras around the country, other jobs before I arrived in St. Louis. But, you know, as early as the first day, I was thrilled by the full complement of strings sitting around me that really supports the sound of a solo wind instrument. Not only the fact that there was a full complement of strings like that, but just the quality of the sound, the special sound. I think that's the most important thing, you know, for me about being in this orchestra is the quality of the colleagues, their musicianship, and also their kindness as human beings.
You also play the oboe, and I know you were first inspired to pick up that instrument because you were mesmerized by an oboe-playing otter in the fourth grade. Can you tell me a little bit more about him?
That's true. I remember this hilarious cartoon that they showed to the kids when it was time to choose a band instrument. My school didn't have an orchestra program, just a band program. So it was, you know, which brass or woodwind are you going to choose? And they had this fantastic cartoon. So funny, you know, the trout played the trumpet and the carp played the clarinet and the otter played the oboe. And there it was, one of those moments of clarity. I saw that animated otter swimming around and I heard that sound and that was it. And, you know, I went home and I was on a mission to get my parents to agree to this plan of playing the oboe. And initially, they were skeptical, I have to say, but, it worked out all right in the end.
Now, your career has had a variety of twists and turns, and you're an oboist, you play English horn, oboe d'amore, and I'm curious, at what point did you know that you were going to be able to sort of do the English horn full-time as you are now?
Well, I had a very strong reaction to playing the English horn the first time that I picked it up. It was something like I just knew that I wanted to go in that direction and lean toward it. I was already in college. I was already a music major in oboe performance at Temple University in Philadelphia. And I think I was hired to play a gig, and I borrowed an English horn from the school and got a reed from somebody, something like that. And I just played it, and it felt right. It felt like my own voice coming through, the voice that I wanted, that maybe I hadn't exactly been able to achieve on the oboe. I think I was just drawn toward that darker sonority, that tenor voice. So it takes a long time to develop the very best result. Any oboe player can automatically play the English horn, but it takes a lifetime to search for the right sound and to become completely dexterous with it. and expressive in the right way, because it presents some different technical challenges than the oboe. I didn't know if I would be able to make a career as a solo English horn player until later. Initially, as you mentioned, that my career has had a lot of twists and turns. I started out in the early days, I was playing principal oboe with the Memphis Symphony. I had a couple of other positions here and there, and I was often being hired as an oboe player. And I loved to play the oboe, but I was dreaming about making this shift. And I was able to do that later on when I went to the Buffalo Philharmonic. And I was the English horn player there for 3.5 years before I joined the St. Louis Symphony.
And were you working under Joanne Folletta at that time?
Yes, I was. Joanne's so wonderful.
Yeah. Any fond memories of that experience that you'd like to share?
Oh, well, I really loved being in Buffalo. I mean, a lot of people don't like the snow, but I always found it quite magical looking out the window. And I didn't mind the hard work of kind of putting on the snow boots and tromping through. I miss most about my time in Buffalo the colleagues. I mean, anywhere you go, it's about the relationships with the other musicians and the people. And there are some wonderful musicians in the Buffalo Philharmonic and friends. And so when it was time for me to go to the St. Louis Symphony, I had to say goodbye, to the everyday encounters with those people. And that was hard, but we keep in touch.
You're also part of a chamber group, Cortango Orquesta. It's a tango dance band. Why did you want to be part of this ensemble? Actually, you created it, right?
I did. I started it, it was about 5 years ago now. I started it. I had taken up dancing Argentine tango as a hobby. I was taking class and lessons in St. Louis, and I even traveled to Argentina in the summertime. I spent some time there taking class and experiencing the social dancing in its birthplace. I was drawn to the music. I couldn't believe how close it was in nature to what I do in the orchestra. The strings and the sound of the bandoneons, very rich, the texture. And I thought, oh, I wish I could play this music. I always thought to myself, I wish I could play it. And then it occurred to me when a friend in a class sort of asked me, I don't understand, you know, you're a musician, why can't you play it? Just go ahead and do it. And I thought, oh, of course I can. I just have to, that was sort of an aha light bulb moment for me. I thought I just have to create the setting for myself. Since I don't play a traditional tango instrument, I had to find a way to arrange the dance tunes and the concert tangos to include my instrument. So over the years, we have worked up quite a heavy songbook, which over the years we departed from doing exclusively tango, dance and concert tango, and now we play rags, indigenous music of St. Louis, of course, Scott Joplin, and we play American ballads and, of course, now Christmas tunes.
That is really fun. It just occurred to me, is the name of this dance band also kind of a play on words like the title of your Christmas recording?
Yes, the core in Core Tango and Core Christmas is to reference my instrument as it's known most places in the world as the cor anglais by its French name. I mean, here in the States, we call it the English horn. But almost everywhere around the world, and most of the time when I see a part on the stand in front of me, it says cor anglais, the horn of English horn. And that is why I named the band Core Tango, to, you know, draw attention to the unique instrument in the group. Core Christmas, it was the same idea. But there's also the double meaning. It wasn't lost on me that it's the Latin root for heart. So that has an extra layer of meaning. Thank you. the early part of the album, the first few tracks feature Cuartango, the sound of the strings and piano of Adam Manis, who is the primary arranger for Cuartango. So those early arrangements on the album are all made by Adam. And he's so clever as an arranger. Throws in quite a number of Easter eggs, which hopefully listeners will enjoy. The Who song from Whoville is quoted in White Christmas. In Carol of the Bells, you can hear a reference to Piazzolla's famous ballad tango, Oblivion. As well as Skating from Charlie Brown Christmas. But he has written for the English horn in a way that features like a singer for this particular album. And later on, we have another arrangement that features Cuartango, which is an adaptation that I made of the classic Mannheim Steamroller Silent Night Chip Davis recording. We sort of follow that very closely. It truly honors the original Chip Davis arrangement. So those are the ones that feature Cuartango. And then later on in the album, at the last track, Comfort Ye, it's the strings of Cuartango, not the whole band.
You also hang out with Adam Manis and his trio, and they're featured on this recording. Let's talk about the tracks where we hear them.
Yeah, we were tossing around a lot of different ideas. Adam Manis and I had a lot of conversations, you know, over the last 2.5 years about, you know, how to arrange for Cuartango. And I had the idea with I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm. I really wanted it to sound like a jazz track. And I was asking him, how can we do that? And he had the idea, you know, to do it as a jazz standard. I, of course, don't improvise, so I'm reading the part. Guys in the Adam Manis trio are doing their regular thing that they do in the clubs. The recording sessions were totally improvised by them, just using the charts. So that was fun for me, very different. We did Christmas Time Is Here in that way also. Take was a little different, and it was a delight. I think they enjoyed it too. You know, this meeting of the two styles, I thought, well, I hope that this is working out all right. But they liked it, and they kind of thought of me as the singer doing a straight verse, you know, like they might do at the very beginning of one of their jazz explorations. Always starts with something that's kind of a straight statement. So we did it in that way.
Where do we hear the trombones of the St. Louis Symphony?
The trombone players in my orchestra are featured on three tracks at the end of the album. Bring a Torch, Jeanette Isabella, Lo, How a Rose Air Blooming. And In Dulci Jubilo. These arrangements were made especially by another arranger I work with often, Adam DiSorgo. He has a really great ear for voice leading, and there are some unexpected twists in these arrangements. They are mimicking the style of a traditional brass chorale, just, you know, with my sound of the English horn kind of blending in as an honorary brass member for these arrangements.
There is one place on this recording where we hear Ravel's famous bolero woven into a familiar carol. Whose idea was that?
That was my idea. Well, I've always loved Little Drummer Boy. People have different feelings about that particular Christmas tune, but I've always loved it, found it so charming in its simplicity. I had the idea about the repetition of it. It's a little tricky. I didn't want to do any kind of cheesy modulation with that song. I thought there must be some kind of representation of a drum. And I originally had the idea because I thought, you know, who better to play the part of the little drummer boy on my Christmas album than my wonderful colleague in the St. Louis Symphony, principal percussionist William James. When we do bolero in the St. Louis Symphony, we have the snare drum placed right next to me. I always play the oboe d'amore solo whenever we do that piece in the orchestra, and Will is seated right next to me. And so it just occurred to me, what if I had this ostinato kind of going throughout Little Drummer Boy, and then my co-arranger, Adam DiSorgo, and I had sort of layered the parts on top of each other to imitate the instrumentation in bolero and the harmonic progressions at the end of that fantastic piece.
There's another traditional carol that also plays off of the inspiration of Giancarlo Minotti's Amahl and the Night Visitors. Would you talk about that too, please?
The original idea to include Amahl and the Night Visitors came from my teacher, retired principal oboist of the New York Philharmonic, Joe Robinson. I was visiting with him, I think it was the summer of 2016. I was visiting his home and talking about this project that I had started, and he said, you have to play Amahl and the Night Visitors. You have to include that Shepherd's Dance duet because it's iconic for the oboe. And it's iconic Christmas material for the oboe. We all know it. We all love it. And since it was going to be some of this recording produced in the studio, it would be possible for me to layer tracks on top of each other. So, of course, I'm playing both parts of the oboe duet. And I thought, well, I don't see how I can just isolate this as a track. I feel like there needs to be more expanded material. And so it was my idea to tie it in with Do You Hear What I Hear? It's sort of, you know, the same subject material of the Three Kings referenced in Do You Hear What I Hear? And in that, the opera, Amahl and the Night Visitors. I worked it out to kind of play the melody and resolve the Do You Hear What I Hear melody, and it leads into a representation of that duet. We recreated the original score for the Shepherd's Dance duet, but in an non-traditional way. The string parts are actually played by muted strings on the piano. Adam Manis recreating the original score. In fact, the very last thing that I recorded when I was completing this album was the tambourine part layered over the section of Amahl and the Night Visitors. And I thought, I can't feel complete until I put this tambourine part on top of this track, and then we'll be done.
There's also a reference to a rhapsody by a composer who may not be as well known, Charles Martin Loeffler. Would you explain where we might hear that and why this is such a significant work to you?
Sure. The piece I reference is Charles Martin Loeffler's Deux Rhapsody for oboe, viola, and piano, and I'm referencing the second movement called La Cornemuse, translated the bagpipes. I use that in the track that is the Wexford Carol, an arrangement that I made with the idea of the English horn imitating the sound of the Irish bagpipe. Sort of different techniques to do that in the studio, but the speed of air I was using in particular, I don't think I ever, you know, blew so hard into the horn as when I was trying to imitate the bagpipe. It was a little light bulb moment when I was thinking about bagpipes, and somehow my brain went to thinking about that wonderful piece that I have performed many times as an oboist, and there is an incredible modulation that happens. There's a kind of a drone, and the oboe player just goes full out with this material that imitates the bagpipe. So I referenced that material in order to modulate.
Why did you want to make this holiday recording?
It was just something that was in my heart. I love the holiday season. I love the Christmas music. I've just always been drawn to these melodies, and there's a lot of offerings of Christmas music out there. I've always been drawn to the recordings, you know, that I felt were really pure, like the old Philadelphia Brass recordings. You know, when something is done really straight from the heart, some of the Sinatra, Nelson Riddle arrangements, things like that. I just wanted to make one that was mine.
For Christmas, a brand new holiday recording from Callie Bannon, the solo English horn player of the St. Louis Symphony. That's new classical tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.